This is Susie Larson. I want to thank you today for downloading this podcast from Live the Promise. I do hope you enjoy it. Thanks also for your continued support of Faith Radio. I want you to know you can donate anytime by clicking on the Support Faith Radio tab. Have a great afternoon, and God bless you. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson here with Tim Marks on the board, Grace on the phone lines, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome to Live the Promise. A very happy, beautiful Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Maybe you celebrated your mom, or maybe you're a mom who were celebrated. Tim, did you celebrate your somebody
yes,
yesterday?
Yes, we did.
Your wife?
Yes, we took my wife out to dinner last night, and my daughter was working all day, so we had to wait until the evening. But yes, we did.
Very good.
I had a great Mother's Day. A very nice, relaxing weekend for once.
Yeah, well, good for you. I'm glad you've had that. You've been on the run.
Yes, we have.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about something that really pertains to lots and lots of Christians. We're talking about anxiety and how it impacts us as Christ followers, and even what to do when anxiety rises up. In fact, my guest today says, perhaps anxiety is an act of grace because it encourages us to face our fears so that we can then choose to freely follow God where He's calling us to. In a moment, I'll be talking to Rhett Smith about his new book, The Anxious Christian. Can God use your anxiety for good? I'm going to bring him on in just a moment. I've got a quick announcement. You've been hearing about the IJM event coming up. If you live in the Twin Cities or you feel like making a road trip, it is tomorrow night. International Justice Mission rescues young girls from human trafficking and whole communities from bonded slavery. Really, these guys and gals confront the world's worst bullies. And as you've heard many times, Troy and Sarah Groves and my husband and I, we co-chair the benefits that are hosted here in Minneapolis, Twin Cities. So tomorrow night, this one is different than our usual benefits. It's actually free, and it's at this really cool vintage theater. And I just got to tell you, really, this is an example of what IJM does. They not only go in and rescue young girls and even young boys now, sad to say, whole communities from bonded slavery. They work with local law enforcement officials in these third world countries and help them to spot traffickers, help them understand how trafficking, though it makes money, it weakens the society. And so in certain places in third world countries, they've seen trafficking go down by like 70% because their police force locally gets on board and understands this is a horrific crime against humanity and we're going to put a stop to it. And they're being taught how to do that. In Cebu, there was a young 17-year-old didn't come home. And her mom was so worried about her. Well, that 17-year-old's friend told her she was feeling bad. She had to help the family with money, so she took a job, a waitressing job across the harbor. And as soon as she heard that, she realized this was probably a trafficking situation. The mom desperately went to the local police, who'd been trained by IJM, and the Cebu force said, yep, you are right. And they hopped in their cars. They raced around the harbor, beat the ship. When they met the ship in the harbor, and they had trafficked her and two other girls, but they were able to rescue them before they were ever violated by traffickers. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Yeah. And so then they were able to arrest those guys and then shut down that brothel. They're doing absolutely amazing work. So if you want to attend tomorrow night, you can register online. But we just found out at our last meeting, even if you show up tomorrow night on Tuesday night, they're going to let you in. So if you need more information, go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/deeperlifeinchrist, and learn about it. It's going to be a very inspirational night. If you're free tomorrow night, Tuesday night, I'd love to see you out there. So it's going to be a good time.
It sounds like it. And I wish I could be there. I can't myself, but I encourage anybody that can.
Yeah, Grace is going to be there, and our own Neil Stavem's going to be issuing one of the prayers of the night. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, the thing that impresses me about that organization the most, I think, is that they have prayer times twice a day.
And
because of what they do, they face such spiritual warfare that they are praying twice a day as a staff.
Yeah, and they're officed in 15 countries around the world, and every office stops twice a day to call on God because their work is so dangerous. Isn't that amazing?
It's just an amazing thing.
Yeah. If you need to know more about IJM, go to IJM.org. It's a powerful organization. All right. Let me tell you about my guest. We're talking about the anxious Christian. And what are we supposed to do with our anxiety? And can God actually use it for good? That's what we're talking about today. Let me tell you about our guest. Rhett Smith is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He's in private practice and serves on staff as a therapist at the Hideaway Experience in Amarillo, Texas. He helps couples restore their marriages. He's a graduate of Fuller Theological Seminary. He lives in Frisco, Texas with his wife, Heather, and their two children. And you can learn more about him on the web at rhettsmith.com. And I got to just say, Rhett, that is a cool name.
Thank you.
Were you named after anybody?
My mom liked the movie Gone with the Wind. Okay. And I think because Smith is just so common, they wanted to give me something different for the first name. So.
Oh, very good. Very, very good. Yeah. Well, we like to start out our conversations talking scripture, and you chose Psalm 118, verse 5. When hard pressed, I cried to the Lord, and he brought me into a spacious place. That's a great passage. Talk to us about why you chose that verse.
I think where I am in my stage of life, just all the things going on personally, and just dealing with the stuff that we're going to talk about in the book with anxiety, sometimes when I'm anxious, I feel really hard pressed in, like the walls are kind of caving in and surrounding. And I love that image that the psalmist writes about God bringing us to this open, spacious place where we feel free, you know? Mm. And it's just been a passage that's been in my heart here recently.
Mm. I love the word of God. Well, you have some personal history with anxiety. I wonder if you could give us a little backstory on your journey.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Mother's Day, this will be, it's hard to add up here, the 26th Mother's Day without my mom. Mm. She passed away of breast cancer when I was 11. And one of the things I write about, I think for me, that was really the beginning of my really journey with anxiety. After she passed away, not only was that just really difficult, but I went back to school a couple weeks later, and when the teacher called on me to read, I could no longer read out loud anymore. I just had literally puffs of air coming out of my mouth, and it was really, really embarrassing, and I started to stutter, and that for me was just, for as far as I can think back, the real root of my anxiety, just a real fear. And from there, it just tended to manifest itself in a lot of other ways, and where it really just got a grip over my life, and it's something I've been working on, you know, for better part of my 37 years, it feels like. So,
how did your dad come around you during the loss of your mom?
You know, I think he was probably as lost as we were in many ways. I know now, as I'm older, as what I saw signs of depression, he was really depressed. You know, my mom had been in and out of the hospital for 5 years, and eventually went into a coma. And he was pastoring a church and raising two boys, and so. You know, one of the things, we had a lot of church support. He was a pastor. He took us to one of his best pastor friends to kind of do some pastoral care. But I think in the end, I think overall, he was as sad and as depressed and as confused about what to do. You know, as a pastor, you learn how to walk alongside people. But when it hits you personally and emotionally, I think you're just so distraught, you don't even know what to do.
Yeah, the loss of a spouse or a child, you know, just, I lost my dad in January, but I'm a grown mm-hmm. woman, you know, but being in the middle of raising kids still and having to deal with that is just unfathomable, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My wife and I just moved this weekend, and I cleaned out some boxes, and I found a tape recording of my mom when I was 5 years old. I haven't heard it since ever, and I played it, and it's been really interesting. My dad and brother and I, just over the last, you know, 4 or 5 days, have been talking about hearing her voice for the first time and just kind of sharing what that was like to lose her. And it's something we've been doing over the years now anyways, but I think we're still in the process of grieving and loss, you know, even 26 years later.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Well, you say in the book how you really dealt with a stutter issue, and it really kept you wanting to keep yourself from being exposed in that regard, and kind of determined you weren't going to speak in front of people. And then you were called on to speak for an Easter service. Tell us that story and what God showed you in that scenario.
Yeah, it's funny. Just never really ask God anything you really don't want. But I remember as a junior in college, just feeling really confined and fearful of speaking, but it felt like God wanted more. And I just told God one night, I said, God, if you give me an opportunity to speak, I will take it. And those are my words. And almost 2 weeks later, maybe even less than that, I got a call from the student life office saying, hey, we'd like you to be our speaker for the Easter morning sunrise service. And I literally said, no, I'm not interested. Thank you. Hung up the phone. And as I hung up the phone and kind of sat down, I realized that's the prayer I had prayed for 2 weeks earlier. And so I called them back and said, I'll do it. And so that Easter morning in 1995, I got up to preach in front of all my classmates at my small Christian college, and kind of really, stumbled my way through it. But I just thought that was really apropos. It was Easter morning, and almost 10 years to the date of my mom passing away, and I just felt like that was a moment of God saying, hey, I'm going to use this, and I'm going to redeem it in a way, and I'm going to give you a new life out of this anxiety that you've always felt.
Well, what are some of the things, as a therapist and now as someone who's walked through it, what are some of the things you've learned about anxiety? Because there are a lot of misconceptions around it, I would guess.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely, what I've kind of come to realize in my reading and just in my work as a pastor and counselor is there's, you know, when we all are going to face anxiety at some point in our lives, and there's one or two things we can do with it. One, we can pretend it doesn't exist and kind of bury it under the rug. And that's when it tends to manifest itself in a lot more serious issues, like being really depressed or being really anxious, some kind of disorder or addiction. Or second, we can hold it up to light and acknowledge it and just say, hey, you know, this is here for a purpose. Maybe God's trying to speak to me, or maybe he's using it to help me face a fear. And so I think it just tends to come to all of us in a variety of ways, but it's up to us to really decide, how do we want to handle it? Do we want to pretend it's not there, or do we want to face it head on?
Yeah, one of my favorite insights comes from Anne Graham Lotz, and she says how a personal crisis can actually turn into a personal revival if you'll let it, if you'll leverage it that way and bring it before the Lord, because that's what he's there for in all those places. But we tend to isolate in personal crises. We isolate when we're anxious, and yet that's probably the worst thing we can do, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I think anxiety tends to do that. It did it for me because you're embarrassed and you're fearful. And I think especially in the Christian community, there's a lot of misconception that something, because I'm anxious, that must mean something's wrong with my faith, that something, maybe I'm not a good enough Christian, or I don't pray enough, or God's mad at me. And I think it really does tend to isolate us, and it drives us into hiding. And, you know, I was at a conference the other day, and I was talking to these three people, and one of them said to me, and they didn't even know I was an author of this book. She said, how come we can talk about all kinds of issues in our Christian circles, in my small group, like porn and drinking and things like that? But she's like, if I tell them I'm anxious, it's like all of a sudden no one wants to talk to me anymore. Like something's wrong with me. And so she was just sharing out of her own personal journey. So I think it's interesting how that happens a lot for us in our churches and in our faith communities.
You know, if we're going to be a healed and whole body, we need to be able to address these things that are so common to so many. You know, you know, Scripture talks about be anxious for nothing. And yet you say that verse, though it's powerful, gets thrown around almost as a platitude and almost has a reverse effect on those who are genuinely struggling. Say more about that.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that one of the reasons I put that verse down was because I hear that a lot. People say, well, Paul says, you know, don't be anxious. And it's true, you know, that's God's words. It's Scripture. It's truth. But I think what we tend to forget is, Paul is someone who's really faced his fears. I mean, he's been stoned, he's been shipwrecked, he's been beaten, and he's come out on the other side saying, you know, don't be anxious and be able to follow God. And I think what we tend to do in the Christian community is we don't know how to deal with people's anxieties or issues, so we'd rather just throw a verse at them rather than maybe walk alongside of them through those difficult times, you know, when they are anxious or their marriage is falling apart or they're really struggling. And, you know, people end up in my office every day saying, I'm anxious. And someone in the church told me not to be, but here I am in your office, anxious. Mm-hmm. What do I do about it? And so I just felt like we weren't doing enough. And we kind of just tend to throw that verse around without really, I don't know, really thinking about the implications of that.
Absolutely. Well, we've got three copies of Rhett's new book to give away, The Anxious Christian, Can God Use Your Anxiety for Good? Actually, we have four copies to give away. Maybe you've got a question for our guest today or comment how you've dealt with anxiety, what God's taught you about it. I'd love to know. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Otherwise, email me, Susie@faithradionet.com. Susie@faithradionet.com. Talking to Rhett Smith today about The Anxious Christian, How God Can Use Your Anxiety for Good. I asked the question on Facebook. Every day we ask a question related to the show. And I asked today, what stirs up anxiety for you and how do you deal with it, Rhett? And here's a few answers. And I'm wondering if you think these are common to most folks. Angie says, feeling overwhelmed when trying to make time for everything in my life. God, which I fail at, daily, family, work, bills, friends. And Karina says, lots of things stir up anxiety for me ever since I can remember. I've always been an anxious person. Since I've been saved, it's gotten better, but I still struggle. Helen says, my mom stirs up anxiety for me. She's overly critical, controlling, and I'm a nervous wreck before I see her. Sometimes I even get physically ill. Christina says, holidays, Mother's Day. I grew up without either parent, and when I see friends with their moms, it hurts me deeply. I'm happy for them, but she's hurt for herself. And Tony says, work gets my anxiety going, but I go to Scripture and pray to resolve this, and God is faithful and gets me through every time. What do you think of those comments?
I mean, those are great comments. They hit on all the kind of main themes. I heard someone mention her mom, you know, so a lot of anxiety sometimes we'll discover has its roots in our family and how we were raised, and maybe we had an overly anxious, you know, person. I heard that person saying, you know, their job, you know, work and different life transitions we face, you know, bring up all kinds of anxiety. And, you know, usually what the one word that I heard that jumped out there was overwhelmed. I hear a lot of times when I'm anxious, I just feel so overwhelmed. What do I do?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to talk about here because I want to make sure we uncover, you know, there's anxiety related to finances, and there's some things we can do about finances, and you share your journey in there. Anxiety about being overcommitted. I mean, there's some of these issues we, as you say, have to be relentless and make some life choices, but then there's other things that sort of plague us and ambush us that we can do nothing about. So as we're waiting for these calls to come in, I see them coming in. It takes a little bit for them to get processed. Let's talk about, tell me about your financial story, because you kind of connected some of your anxiety to that and how you and Heather suddenly got relentless with your finances. And tell that story and what you learned about anxiety related to that.
Yeah, you know, money is one of the biggest issues that I see in my, you know, people, whether it's one of the main causes of divorce and other issues, and money seems to be a root of a lot of our anxiety. It makes us feel out of control and you know, fearful, maybe feeling that kind of pressed in that the psalm talks about when we're in debt, kind of feeling pressed in. And my wife and I just decided, you know, probably, 2007, 2006, that we had a lot of school loans, a lot of debt, and it really kind of limited us to what we felt like God was calling us to do, like to move to Texas from California. Our options felt limited. And so we decided to get serious, and we started following the Dave Ramsey plan, you know, the total money makeover. And we were able to pay off a real significant amount of money. Overall, I think total, the number I had now was about $115,000 in about 24 months. That included some debt on our mortgage when we moved, paying that off, and just paying our school loans. And that we saw that the more we were committed to this, to paying off the money, the more free we felt, the less anxious we felt. And now we're starting to see the fruition of that choice. Like, we're more free now to do things. I was more free to launch my own private practice. My wife is free, you know, to not have to work as much and quit her job. I'm free to write more and not have to rely on certain things. And so for us, money was really tied to a sense of being anxious, and it's something that we needed to work on. And, you know, and that's something I really want to help couples with as well, and really encourage our friends and the friends around us. I see more and more of them trying to get out of debt because they see how free we feel, and they can sense that difference of them being anxious and us being more calm about it.
Boy, that's really, really good. Again, I see a handful of calls coming in, but I want to read an email from Michelle. She says, anxiety is something that I'm currently dealing with. I'm experiencing extreme money troubles brought on by my own disorganized life. How I deal with this is to turn to God and pray for guidance and peace. Sometimes I feel that in my moments of anxiety, I feel I have to move forward. I have to do this or fix it. When I get like this, I wonder if I'm following God's will or if I'm not listening to God and trying to fix my own problems. What would you have to say to that?
Man.
And it almost sounds like she thinks that she might not be trusting God by taking some initiative, but you do address initiative in the book. We have to take some initiative, don't we?
Yeah, you know, I talked about being intentional there because I think what happens too often, you know, there's a, you know, sure, I can believe that God is in control and that God is moving me in a direction, but I also believe that God wants us to participate in, you know, in his kingdom and in our lives. And you know, I think of the story of Jacob wrestling with God. I'm not going to let go. He's actively pursuing this change that he wants. Or in John 5, when Jesus tells the guy to pick up his mat and walk, you know, that there's something that we have to do. And so I believe at times in our lives, you know, it's not about trusting God, but it's about being involved and participating in what God is already doing. And so, you know, I would encourage her, and only she knows that, and only she can discern what that looks like, but I would say it's better to act sometimes and to move and to keep moving. And you know, unless you hear something different from God, we just sometimes just can't wait on God to fix everything. You know, if as his people, he wants us to play a role and to play a part. And so, but that's the thing with anxiety, right? It can keep us paralyzed and captive sometimes. And so part of breaking free from that is just to make a choice and to be intentional, just to get moving at all, just to get some type of momentum forward.
Yeah, we really do need to hear from the Lord. And I remember in our early years, my hubby was handling the finances, but he was working three jobs. I was battling Lyme disease. Our finances were turned upside down, but I had so much anxiety around money. And I really could tell he was working three jobs. He couldn't do it. And so I needed to take it over, even though I was in terrible shape myself. But there was something about where I felt like God was saying, you can pray about this all day long, but someone has to be able to manage this. You know what I mean? And there's times to wait on the Lord, but there's times where it's like you can pray till you're blue in the face, but somebody's got to make some healthy choices and establish healthy boundaries, don't you think?
No, I agree. And I think, as you're talking, I was thinking about my own, story of leaving my job, and my wife is, she's the one making the money. I don't have a job, and I'm leaving the ministry and coming over here. And it's true. Like some of us in a family, somebody's got to do something, and someone's got to participate, and someone's got to make some choices and stuff. And I think sometimes in a Christian community, we can all sit around and wait so long to say, okay, I haven't heard specifically from God yet. But I think about the prophet Elijah, where he's up there and God speaks in a real quiet, still voice sometimes. And so we're not going to always get that lightning bolt. This is what you have to do. And sometimes I think it's just about trusting and just about following God and moving forward and not letting everyone be stuck or mired in anxiety there in a family or in a relationship.
Wow. Okay, I just want to say to those of you who are on hold, we're having a little technical issue, so I don't want you to go away because I want to hear from you. I see a handful of calls there. You can also email me if you've got a question, Susie@faithradionet.com. Susie@faithradionet.com. Talking to Rhett Smith today about his book, The Anxious Christian, Can God Use Your Anxiety for Good? Rhett, I'd love for you to make a distinction between somebody who maybe struggles with perpetual bouts of anxiety. They have a proneness towards being anxious about many things, worrying about many things. Between that and someone who has panic attacks, maybe describe the difference between the two.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference. Panic attacks is a much more severe form of anxiety where you're really paralyzed. Like literally you cannot move. You hear people use words like I'm having a heart attack or I'm stuck. Like I literally can't get out of my chair. It feels like my legs won't work, or I'm so out of breath that it does feel like I'm going to die. I'm so fearful to get in that car and drive. I mean, there's a real sense that it feels really out of control, where I think that's a big difference from normal anxiety where, I'm fearful about taking a test today, or I'm fearful about having that tough conversation with my wife, or I'm fearful or anxious about taking on that new job. And it doesn't paralyze us and keep us from, moving forward, where a panic attack really is, pretty serious. It does feel like you want to die. I don't know if that's helpful, but, I would tell a person, unless it feels like you're probably going to die of a heart attack or you just even can't even function or move, you're probably experiencing just a more normal type of anxiety, just a fear about moving on or some type of transition or some kind of issue in your marriage and relationship. And that is a much more normal type of anxiety. The other one keeps you really stuck.
Mm. And that one, would you say they would need some professional help to get through?
I do. I think both can really benefit some professional help. Sometimes I have people come in who just need a little bit of help and some encouragement and some direction and to deal with maybe just some normal anxiety. They can't really discern some stuff. But if you're struggling with a panic attack, I think that needs kind of all hands on deck. People like really helping you out. And I'll just say this now because I get asked a lot is what I think about meds. And I'll say that, I've seen people's lives completely change in a positive direction from just getting on some right medication. But what I tell them is meds aren't going to solve your problems. Meds can help you face the day, kind of rise and shine in order that you can then begin to get at the root of what your anxiety is and begin to deal with that. And so, I try to encourage people to, because I know in a Christian community, a lot of times people are anti-meds, but I've seen it really benefit a lot of people, and I think God makes smart people who can make meds to help us out just like they can with hearts and other issues that we face with our bodies.
I'm glad you said that, and I'll just, in the interest of full disclosure, about 15 years ago went through mild depression, but I was slipping, And the doc said to me, would you just tell your son who has asthma to think positive when he's having a breathing problem? And yeah. So I got on a mild antidepressant for a year, but I'd heard what you had just said and that many use it for a silver bullet. So I thought, I'm going to counseling once a week. I'm going to use this as a buffer, a cushion, so I can face these things that have gotten me here. And I did. I was relentless. It's like I grabbed the bull by the horns. I'm like, we're dealing with this stuff. And at the end of a year, I weaned myself off. And the doc said, if there could be a textbook way to use antidepressant, you've done it. And I've never returned since then. But I have seen people continue to mess with the dosages and on and off again, and it messes them up. So it can be dangerous if you don't do it the right way, right?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that. No, I think if you're going to take meds, I mean, my preference is to do it under the help of a fully trained psychiatrist whose their only job is to monitor those meds. They're paying close attention to that. And I think that, along with some counseling and a great group of friends and support and community, people can tackle any issue in life and really get to the root of that and have healthy, functioning lives.
Yeah, you can get through depression, come out the other side, and have it behind you. Talking to Rhett Smith today about the Anxious Christian. We see you guys calling in, and we want to get to you. We'll do that on the other side of the break. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, email me, Susie@faithradionet.com. One of the ways that I dealt with it was lots of exercise and lots of worship. So we're coming out of this break with a powerful worship song. Hopefully that'll bless you today. More with Rhett Smith in just a moment.
Let the worshipers arise. Let the sons and the daughters sing. I'm surrendering my all to you, O Lord. I surrender to the King.
Honestly, the thing that really gives me the most anxiety in my life is the health and well-being of my kids. And I just, every day, I just try to, and it's really hard, but I try and just turn it over to God, because sometimes you just don't have control over things.
Anxiety over kids and the health of my son, I guess. But yeah, you have to give it over every day and consciously be researching, thinking, what can I do? What ideas has God given me that I can do to help him?
I have a house that will not sell in California. So, you know, whenever I'm having one of those good days where just life is good, it's a beautiful sunny day outside, I have a joy stealer, and it's just this house that kind of looms. I'm like, gosh, I wish that thing would sell. So that is something that creates anxiety just because it's so far away. That's more of a helpless situation. So there's a lot of faith involved in that and just saying, God, you know, you provided the ability to have this house, and it's yours to do with what you want. And even saying that is a difficult thing, because obviously what I want is that house to sell. But you find yourself really living out your faith. The things we say we believe in, the Lord has everything under control when I'm thinking about that house and my inability from so far away to really manage it.
Several things stir up anxiety for me. I'm definitely out there looking for a good job, and makes me anxious to think about not being able to find something that fits. I guess I deal with it by trusting in God and knowing that he's going to be able to take care of those things. And if I give him the control, which is difficult, but if I do it, he will reward those efforts of being able to let go of those things.
You struggle with anxiety, you're absolutely not alone. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Rhett Smith about his book, The Anxious Christian, Can God Use Your Anxiety for Good? We've got very patient callers on the line. Mary's calling from Egan. She's got a question for you, Rhett. Mary, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was so happy to hear that you were having this program on. You know, I've been suffering from anxiety. I guess it started last summer. I was hit with it. I thought I was having a heart attack, so, you know, I was in the hospital and everything, and then I went through a difficult time, and then it kind of stopped for a couple of months, and then it came back full blown again. But I just, you know, nobody really understands. I now have a friend that the Lord's put in my life that's kind of helping me, but she's never suffered from anxiety. But most of the people at my church, they don't, they just say, oh, you know, well, you don't trust God, you don't do this. So I've got scriptures written all over on note cards. I've got papers all over, Bibles open all over, and I pray. And, but worship does help. But when I'm sometimes when I'm sleeping at night, you know, I think it's like the enemy wakes me up and attacks me with the anxiety. It's so terrible.
It is terrible,
so
Mary.
Terrible.
And I'm so
sorry.
It goes
on all day. Even like now, it goes on all day. It lets up, and then it comes, you know, come like a wave. You know, sometimes it comes in waves.
Brett, you wrote about that in the book, how someone who doesn't relate will throw those scriptures around and saying you're not trusting God enough, and it just heaps another load on someone like Mary, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I was just thinking about what she said. You know, she goes to a friend or tries to confide in someone to get help, and the very person she's turning towards just says something else that makes a person feel more guilty or more anxious. And so, she, you know, Mary, you're like the very person I actually wrote the book for, because I was kind of tired of hearing that in my own life, and I was tired of hearing people come in and say, well, I was told to just read these verses and all my anxiety would disappear. But, you know, and those are truth. Those are God's truths. Those are from God. But God never promised that even when we're in the truth or reading his word that all of our problems disappear. We're still anxious, and we need people, instead of making us feel worse, we need them to really walk through that dark night with us and to really just be present, almost maybe say nothing, but just to be present there in that hard time.
Yeah, we tend to tie other people's pain up in a bow, pain that we don't understand. We want to package it nicely, so, and that's so painful. Terry is calling from White Bear Lake. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Thank you.
What you have a question today?
Yeah, I was wondering what Rhett thought as far as the relationship between genetics and anxiety struggles, if there is one that he sees, or if it's mostly just situational issues.
You beat me to the punch, Terry. I had that on my list of questions, but you asked it much better. So how about it, Rhett?
Well, you know, that's a great question. Actually, mm-hmm. I've got that question quite a bit. And at least in my understanding, in my reading, and again, I'm not an expert in that specific when it comes to science and the brain and stuff, but what I do tend to see more often than not, it has less to do with our genetics and more to do with our family environment, the way that we're raised early on, and also some of the situational areas that Terry's talking about. So when we talk about family, like, it could go back as early as just being a kid and just how that anxiety played out in our families or things that happened to us, or it could go out to something more current, like I lost my job and I'm anxious. And so I see more of the connections there than I do of some type of tie-in with the brain. Though, don't, you know, I'm sure there's possibilities, and I'm sure that, you know, sometime this week as we discover more and more things about our brain, which we are on a daily basis, that they're probably going to find some type of tie-in, maybe, I think. But as far as a huge study on that, no, I have not seen one.
You know, it's so interesting, too, and this is completely layman's assessment here, but you think about generational things passed down, even generational sins, then you have people who are predisposed to alcoholism. Mm-hmm. You would sure imagine that you could be predisposed to worry and anxiety if that was perpetuated generation after generation after, you know what I mean, where it's...
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, as far as when it comes to the brain, like one of the things I discuss in the chapter 3 is that when we're faced with anxiety, we learn early on a way to cope with that. And maybe we withdraw or we shut down. And so eventually your brain forms a pattern of that whenever that feeling pops up, this is what we automatically do. And some of the great news about brain studies now that we find is that our brain, we can actually rewire it and change some of our you know, coping ways that we've always coped with anxiety. And so there is that kind of piece when it comes to the brain, that it is really, I don't know the word I want to look for, but it can be shaped in some different ways. And so, I think you're right, like alcoholism and other things, I'm sure they'll find a study pretty soon that will maybe will tie in some type of anxiety with it.
Yeah, when you think about, you know, I know I did a little bit of study on the brain just for the whole a chapter that I wrote on renewing the mind and how, mm-hmm. you know, repetitive thoughts form grooves in our mind, but we can actually reroute thoughts and form new instinctive thoughts. And it goes hand in hand with, you know, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I would love to know just how you personally changed your mind about some things and how that helped you in your battle with anxiety.
Well, you know, for me, there was a couple of big moments, and one you already mentioned, I'm in college. But the other big moment was I was going through seminary at Fuller, and I was graduating, and I wanted to do a PhD. And I had this image of just being in a library and studying, and I forgot the fact that, you know, a teacher has to get up and teach, actually. And so, but I was presented with this opportunity as I was doing my internship at Bel Air Pres with all these great college kids. And the church said, hey, we're going to offer this, we're going to put you in the hat for this job. And I said, no, no, no. And over the period of 6 months, without me even giving application, they had narrowed me down to me and another person. I ended up getting the job and an offer. And I just was sitting in the office one day saying, I can either face my anxiety head on, because I think this is where God is calling me, or I can not face it and maybe not live out or in the will that God wants me to live. And so for me, it was about making really intentional choices that really put me in the direct line of my anxiety, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. just facing those exact fears. And so for me, that's been part of the repetition. So anytime I get asked to speak, though I still actually stutter, and I, you know, as I'm talking to you, I can tell I'm getting kind of nervous and I'm messing up words, but I just always say yes, you know, unless there's some other reason, I always say yes, I'll speak. And for me, that's just part of being, you know, facing my fear and getting better and better and trying to change that brain pattern for me to deal with my anxiety.
Rhett, you know, that is just downright heroic, really.
Oh, thanks.
Seriously, I mean, how many people make rules around their fears and create a nice little comfort zone so they never have to leave it? But we'll never accomplish anything of significance if we don't follow God out to those places.
Well, Susie, I realized, I think just one day, I think that's what I was choosing to do, and it was just so miserable to stay in that place of that comfort zone where your fears are just beating you down. The anxiety was winning in many ways, and so I think with God's courage and some friends and, you know, some new opportunities, I was able to kind of face those, you know, head on. And it's a much better place to live with that type of anxiety than to live stuck and feeling overwhelmed and anxious.
So true. You know, because of some things that happened to me when I was young at the hands of some boys in my neighborhood, I had so much fear about leaving the suburb, not to mention the state, not to mention the country, you know. But as I grew in the Lord, my conviction for the things going on around the world, you know, kind of went beyond my my conviction went beyond my courage, and finally my courage had to catch up to my conviction. And when I would go through, even now when I travel internationally, I look like the first Swedish terrorist. I look like, I feel I'm so insecure about going through security. I sweat. My husband will say, you look like you've broken a law. And I'm like, I feel like I've broken a law. I just don't know which one. But I do it every time God calls me out. And every time I get to the other side, I see that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. That we have to follow him, don't we, to these places. When he leads, we got to go if we want to lay hold of everything he has, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, and I was thinking in the end of the Gospel of John where Jesus tells Peter, you know, one day your arms are going to be outstretched and you're going to follow me places you don't want to go. That ultimately when we follow God, it's the places that are often really uncomfortable. It's the laying down of our life. And I think you're right when you said, about being, you know, in Romans 12:1 there, 12:2, it starts with our mind.
Yeah.
It doesn't always start with my heart.
Yeah.
If I waited on my heart to make decisions, then it would probably be a mess. And so sometimes it's about just with our mind saying, okay, this is what I choose to do. And our heart will follow, you know.
Yeah,
and when we follow God, it's scary.
We've got about 6 minutes left to take your calls. 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, you can email me, Susie@faithradionet.com. Rhett, you deal in the book with relationships and how certain relationships can bring on anxiety. We've got an anonymous caller. They said, how do we deal with in-laws, family, and friends who don't understand our anxiety? At times, I'm preparing to go to a family function. I change my mind and decide it's just too difficult. My family reads this as an excuse. Any advice? That's a good question. What do you say?
Gosh, that's a real tough question. Actually, you know, I guess if the person was in my office, you know, and I was talking to them, I think, you know, and obviously this person's married, they have in-laws. I mean, for me, I think the starting point is beginning to have a conversation with in-laws, and that doesn't mean the person with anxiety talking to in-laws. I think that begins with the spouse talking to their parents and really helping them understand what that's like. But I think if we don't communicate and it's not really understood why there's anxiety or what that's about, then the in-laws are going to fill in all the blanks about what that means. It means that they don't want to be around me or something's wrong with us or she doesn't want to be here or there. And so, you know, I think first of all, it's sitting a person down and really educating them on what this anxiety does to me, what that's like. And I find that when we can sit down and educate someone and talk about it, it takes a lot of anxiety away because I don't have to hide it anymore. Everyone's in on my biggest fear, my in-laws included. And so, you know, I would really encourage that because I think if you don't communicate that, you don't walk them through that, then I think that gulf just begins to widen more and more, and it causes a lot more conflict.
Yeah, a lot of misunderstanding. Well, what about the scenario that this gal, I'm trying to think of which one, on Facebook, and she said, Helen says, my mom stirs up anxiety. She's overly critical, controlling. I'm a nervous wreck before I see her. She says, it's gotten worse to the point that I get physically ill before I go to see her. And she's going through counseling now. But what about that? What if it's the person that's like, you know, well, you make me ill. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Because there are some people who are maybe blind to their impact, but really cruel or relentless in their critique. How do you, deal with that?
I think, you know, without knowing everyone's story and being able to give appropriate advice sometimes to this person, I think that really starts with boundaries. If we are indirectly, if we are in some way putting ourselves in danger, you know, physically or emotionally or spiritually, where someone is doing that to us, I think it begins with setting up some healthy boundaries. And that boundary may mean for the season, I'm not allowing you to do this. I'm going to cut you off in some way until I learn to get healthy and figure out what's going on with me. And then, you know, part of that, if the person goes through counseling and kind of that journey of faith with God, is realizing this criticism that my mom is saying to me is not the truth. That's not who I am. That's mm-hmm. not who God sees me. And when we're able to discover that truth about who God sees us, we're able to operate a very different way out of our strengths and being stuck in that fear. That doesn't make it any easier that the person keeps saying that, but, you know, the overly critical mom, you know, that's kind of a cliche, but I see that a lot with anxiety, where a mom is critical and then a daughter or a son is really fearful and anxiety tends to overtake root. And I think there's when really healthy boundaries, I think, have to be set up early on.
Yeah, and truly, not that this is always the case, but I would think sometimes it's the case where, because you've got such a skewed filter, that you might be taking things in a way that they're not intended from other people. You know what I'm saying? If you're raised
yeah.
in an anxious environment, suddenly you think everybody's critical of you, and you maybe mistake things in a way they weren't meant to be taken. But that really means that there's some real healing that needs to happen in your soul too, right?
Yeah, and you said, I mean, that's kind of the lens. We often view every incident in our lives through some lens that's skewed. And so I think everybody who comes into counseling or is working through things has to take, we can only be responsible for ourselves. We can't change our partners. We can't change people around us. And we got to look at ourselves and take responsibility. And that's a case where you talk about your mind being renewed. Is that often that is the case. We have to renew our mind in a way that's centered around the truth about how God sees us, because we may not get from other people what it is that we long for, what mm-hmm. the truth is about us. And so, but that's real hard work. You know, that takes a long time and it takes a lot of work to get there. I don't want to do people, you know, I'm a disservice often when I say, you know, it's just so easy to have these right thoughts and everything will change. It's not. It's a lot of deep soul searching and trying to figure out, who does God see me? How does God see me? And when I can see that and feel that and think that, then I'm a different person.
Yeah. There's something so powerful about giving God access to these places, these wounds, these places that are kind of broken, because when he brings healing and wholeness and truth there, suddenly we have wisdom in places that we were once broken. I'm thinking of Psalm 51:6. It says, behold, you desire truth in the inmost being, and in those hidden places you'll make me know wisdom. And I think the lie is in the inmost being. That's where it goes to hide, and it sort of fleshes out in all these ways. But when we get truth in those places, we function in a whole different place where people sort of lose their power. And I think when people lose their power, we are able to love them like Christ does, because their opinion doesn't, we're not holding it in such regard. You know what I'm saying? We're not idolizing their opinion to the point where it holds us captive. Maybe say a word about that.
Well, yeah, I think first of all, you hit on something right about our hearts. You know, the Psalms and the Proverbs talk about guarding our hearts, because what we allow into our hearts eventually flows out of there. And so there is a sense that we have to protect that. And, you know, the second part you talk about, I mean, we have to be able to be in relationship with people that kind of know where we begin and end in relationship to them, where we just don't take on all their stuff or whatever they say, we just kind of assume. And that takes a lot of courage and kind of really knowing who you are and be able to stand on your own two feet and have a strong sense of self, a strong sense of identity. And I think that strong sense of self and that strong sense of identity comes from our relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
That when it is rooted in that, and it doesn't mean we don't have problems still, but when it's rooted in that, we're less prone to be overly reactive or emotional when someone says something to us or when someone tries to pull us into something, you know? But it is really, the best I can think of it is just picturing someone standing on their own two feet and knowing where you begin and end in relationship. You know, I picture my wife and I, if my wife's whole job is to kind of prop me up in our marriage, well, that doesn't help her out any at all, you know? And so it takes a lot of work for me to kind of figure out who I am and what my relationship with God is so that she's free to be herself and so that we can interact in a way that's loving and non-anxious and really giving to one another.
Mm. It, once again, we do this on the show a lot, but it points us back to the source, that the Lord is the source and people are a gift. And when we subtly shift our hope to people and they don't come through for us in the way we think they should, then we're so disappointed with them. We're so hurt. But our relationships can only be as healthy as our connection with God is, it seems. Hmm. Well, you know, you talk about a kind of a common thread among pastors and church leaders. What's the common thread of anxiety that they deal with? Have you noticed one?
Well, I'm a former pastor, kind of am. I think we're people pleasers. Mm. And I think one of the biggest threads is that we lack a lot of boundaries sometimes in ministry because we want to serve. And now there's a good side to this, right? We got into ministry because we're compassionate, want to serve people. But not well-defined and have healthy boundaries, it can lead to just people-pleasing. And so everything that we do is really determined, our sense of self and identity, out of helping other people. And that drives a lot of anxiety because we can never meet everyone's need, and we can be easily burnt out. And so I think pastors have to really work hard on their anxiety and learning to operate out of a strong sense of self and their relationship with God and not being other dependent upon mm-hmm. people in the congregation to feed their needs or their desires or to constantly affirm them. But when they can be self-dependent, by self meaning coming out of a strong sense of who they are in relation to God, that's a real calming thing for our anxiety. And I just mm-hmm. see that a huge issue in ministry and in our leadership.
You know, I feel for pastors and church leaders, as you said, they get in because they care about people, and yet they're human. And so we put so much on them and have such high expectations of them. And they get tired, they get weary, they get their feelings hurt too. And boy, we can't do enough to support our pastors, that's for sure. Well, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to just try to use the time wisely. And I was thinking, you know, sometimes anxiety keeps us from taking faith steps, but sometimes faith steps bring on a little anxiety. Don't you think?
For sure, they do, you know. And like I mentioned earlier, with faith steps, thinking of Jacob wrestling with God, thinking of faith steps of Peter stepping out, you know, to follow, or like any of the disciples, faith steps of Moses, you know, Abraham, and name anyone where there wasn't some type of anxiety involved. You know, they don't use that word explicitly, but to follow after God, as Paul talks about in salvation, there's a sense of fear and trembling often. So even having faith steps doesn't mean that we're not anxious about it.
Yeah, that's so, so true. Well, what are some practical pieces of advice you could offer someone for whom the anxiety wells up here and there, and there it is again. It's not a panic attack, but just a proneness to anxiety. Are there any practical steps you can offer?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One, you know, I would always start the conversation off with, I would like people to kind of reframe their anxiety and, first of all, not see it as something negative or that God's mad at them or their faith isn't good enough, but to see it as maybe here's an opportunity for growth. I think that's huge. Maybe God is speaking to me through the anxiety, and what is he possibly saying to me? As you do that, I think some real practical, you know, steps are, one, obviously, you know, I'm going to say this, you could get some counseling just to kind of sort that out. It could be through a professional counselor. It could be through a pastor. Second or third, I think you need to be in some healthy relationships. We need other people in community to help bounce things off of us, and so we don't bear that alone. We need people to, you know, bear our burdens with us. You know, fourth, I think we just need to be intentional. We talked about earlier about just getting unstuck. I think it could be as simple and as hard as saying, okay, here's something I've been waiting on for a long time because I'm anxious about it. I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to make a goal to go ahead and plan doing that, and then to go ahead and step out and do that. Just to experiment, you know, just to try it, just like me trying to face my fears of speaking. Sometimes we just have to try it. And you know what? If we fail and we don't want to do it again, then we don't. But at least put yourself in that way to try, to step out and try something new.
Mm, that's really good. Well, let's just say another word about relationships, because I think at times boundaries are taken too far in that. I'm going to cut you off. I like that you said I'm going to cut you off for a season because I'm working on something. But oftentimes people will use boundaries, quote unquote, as a reason to hold a grudge and disconnect and cut off relationships that maybe God wants them to nurture. Can you say a word about that?
Yeah, I was trying to be careful with my words back then.
No, you did that very well.
I don't mean to cut off, but mm-hmm. sometimes we have to get healthy first before
very much.
We interact with people again. And I find, even in my own life, when my wife and I moved to California, we were away from my in-laws and from my parents, and we wanted to establish our own self. And what I realized moving back to Texas was, and I have great in-laws, but being face-to-face with them, then we have to do life together and to deal with issues and deal with our anxieties. But if I just stayed in California, then you know what? I don't really have to deal with them face-to-face except a couple times a year. I don't really have to work through my own issues. And so I think that ultimately to grow, we have to be face-to-face to people, and we have to work through our issues. It's not good enough just to cut them off because we'll never grow. And there are some people, yeah, we don't need to do life with. They're unhealthy, or they can put us in danger. But if we hope to have a healthy relationship with maybe our parent or an in-law or a kid or a spouse by cutting them off, that's never going to happen unless we can be face-to-face and actually work through that anxiety.
Yeah, I really appreciate you said that. And I thought you phrased it well the first time, you know, that it's for a season, you know. I think that's just, and as you said, if there's a danger issue, of course not. But if I'm just getting healthy, then you can communicate that and let the chips fall where they may. Well, this has been a great time, Rhett. I really appreciate it. And I'm thinking of the listener whose life's been marked by worry and anxiety, and yet God is inviting them to a place of peace, of rest and heart. There's going to be some intentional steps they'll need to take. But there'll be some resting they'll have to do, or they'll have to cease striving. I'm just picturing that person listening today, wondering if you'd pray for that person.
Yeah. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for this opportunity, and just pray for each and every person out there who is just struggling with anxiety, Lord. I pray that they would not feel overwhelmed. I pray that they would feel you in the midst of that, and they would be able to see their anxiety maybe as a way that you're trying to draw them closer. And pray that you'd put people in their life to help walk them alongside. In your name, amen.
Well, Rhett, thank you for your time today. We appreciate that you're taking on your own fears and offering what God's giving you for others so that they can be well as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susie. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, God bless you. Yep. Title of the book is The Anxious Christian, Can God Use Your Anxiety for Good? I'm going to leave you with this passage from Philippians 4:4-7, the Message paraphrase. Listen to this. Celebrate God all day, every day. I mean, revel in Him. Make it as clear as you can to all you meet that you're on their side, working with them and not against them. Help them see the Master is about to arrive, and you know what? He could show up any minute. Don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. Before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything coming together for good, will come and settle you down. It's wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. I pray today's show blessed, challenged, and encouraged you. If you struggle with anxiety, there's hope for you. God is with you. He's an ever-present help in time of trouble.
Let the sons and the daughters sing. I'm surrendering my all to you, O Lord. I surrender to the King. Let the words you pray.
You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and you can find a podcast of this interview up on our website at faithradionet.com. Give us a few minutes. It'll be up on podcast. If you think this will help a friend, with a click of a button, you can share it on Facebook, Twitter, or email. We've got people sharing articles up there. Leslie Vernick's just written an article that's, I think, was shared something like 300 times. It was about manipulators. You might want to check it out while you're there, faithradionet.com. Tune in tomorrow. I'll talk with Gary Thomas about his book, Everybody Matters, really how he talks about how the disciplines of our physical body affect our spiritual health. So that'll be tomorrow, Gary Thomas. Finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. And He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a blessed day.